Talking about your magic, when did you become a member of the Magic Circle and how did that come about?
I think I first had an interest in magic, probably actually from my dad. He used to love doing a few simple tricks to entertain my friends when I was, you know, would come around to the house and at birthday parties. He was never a magician. He just had a few silly tricks, you know, the penny behind your ear kind of thing. But he was a great extrovert and he would just do these tricks at the drop of a hat anywhere. So perhaps there were the early beginnings, but I never ever thought it would become a hobby. And it wasn't until I went to St. Paul's College in my second year there that someone bought me a book on card tricks called The Royal Road to Card Magic. And I remember that book. It opened up a whole new world for me. And I saw what power it gave you to be able to do something which not only entertained people, but also baffled them. And I started doing a few card tricks for the boys in the college bar at St. Paul's College. And then you begin to get known for it. And so I thought, gosh, I better start learning a few more. So you buy another book and you buy another book. And by the time I qualified and went to teach at Beaufort School, the kids there knew that I did some magic because I would do it in the classroom. And one of them said, "Sir, my dad is the secretary of the Cotswold Magical Society." And I never knew such things existed. You probably didn't either. So I asked for his name, phoned him up, went along, and the little hobby then became a hobby I could share with others, and I learned from them, and it grew and grew and grew, and I had a natural affinity for doing it. You've got to have plenty of patter and chat, and I found that you could make people laugh as well as entertain them. So it became a hobby I was very much known for, which eventually led to me doing what I do now.
Mm-hmm. We were told that you actually taught John Watkins a conjuring trick that he used as his party piece on Barbarian's Tour.
He did, and in fact several others. Steve Mills, I also taught a trick to. It's actually the same trick, because I had to find one that could be done without too much practice.
Yes.
And I did. I taught John and Steve. Do you know, I didn't think I taught Dick Smith to do it as well. There were a couple of other players, because they would come to me.
Yes.
And it wasn't just for the bar store. Sometimes they would ask me just to teach them something they could do at a do or for friends. And I was quite happy to do that. I'm not sure if the Magic Circle would approve. No. But hey, does it matter? And yes, I think John did do his trick because, as you know, the bar always have this get-together where everyone has to do a turn.
Yes.
Usually it's a song or something like that. Yep. But you can do anything you want. Mm-hmm. And I think John chose to do a magic trick, which I'm told went down very well. And may I also mention young Clive Stuart Smith at this point?
Yes.
Yes, I was at college with Clive Stuart Smith Sr. And his lad, Clive Stuart Smith Jr., went to school in Gloucester and was a very good scrum half and captained England under 20s, I think it was, very successfully to a Grand Slam and played at Gloucester. And young Clive developed an interest in magic. And I'm pleased to say he came over to my house on several occasions and I mentored him into which books to start with, The Royal Road to Card Magic being one that I lent him. And it became one of his hobbies, which he, I believe, still does it. He's moved on to various other clubs now. And I was very pleased that there was an article in The Telegraph in which he was touted as England's next magician, with a picture of him with a fan of playing cards. And he gave me a mention as helping him develop his hobby. So yes, there you are. Magic and rugby have had many links with my involvement.
Tell us a little bit about the social side of rugby in Gloucester.
Yes.
I said before, you were marked out as the entertainer in the side, but I imagine there were others too.
There were many, and I think the social side of rugby, I'm sad to say, is something that doesn't seem to have the same ethos in Premiership rugby these days. Back then, you played your rugby hard on the pitch, and then it was just accepted that you would be in the bar afterwards. And the thing about rugby is, they often say that, you know, you knock seven bells out of your opponents on the pitch, and afterwards you get in the bar and have a drink with them. I'm not so sure that happens so much now. I can remember many occasions having a drink and going out on the town. Sometimes we used to stay, the coach used to stay late on our away games, and we would often be drinking in the bar with our opponents and sometimes go out on the town with them. And yes, many occasions here, standing in the bar and putting on little shows. I remember we did a series of sketches for Alan Brin. It was some occasion, might have been his birthday or something, and in the bar at Kingstone we put on various sketches where we involved Alan, and I dressed up as Sose, someone he met in South Africa. I had to black up and wear a dress and a headdress and come in holding a baby, and I was introduced, and this was apparently Alan's baby from a previous trip to South Africa. I've got a photo of that somewhere. It was the most bizarre thing I've ever done. I also did some magic on occasions in the clubhouse. I remember doing the guillotine trick. I was even then into buying props. I certainly wouldn't go near props now. I much prefer sleight of hand magic. And I can remember doing the trick with the guillotine where you put the carrot in and the carrot gets cut and getting somebody out of the audience. And I'm afraid I don't remember who it is now. I'm putting their head in the guillotine. And yes, it did go well, but you know, of course, the crowd were hoping there'd be a little bit of blood, but there wasn't. So I do remember those days fondly, and things like, I was talking to Jerry Herneman about this trip recently. We went down to play Exeter at the end of one season, and as I said to you, the lads went out on the town, and some of the local lads took it upon themselves to have a go at this group of about six Gloucester players who were in a queue outside a nightclub. And of course, they didn't quite realise what they were up against, and they got more than they bargained for, and the Gloucester lads had a committee man with them, and after these lads were left lying on the ground nursing their injuries, this committee man said, "Right, lads, I think that's it, we're going now." Ushered us, the lads, back to the coach quickly, got us all on board, and we headed out of town, out of Exeter. 10 minutes later, blue light behind us. They had sent a police car to stop us. We had to turn back, and we went back to a police station, next to which was a village hall. And because there were so many of us, they asked the bulk of the party to wait in the village hall while they interviewed the group of players involved in the fracas. Jerry Herneman then says there was a jumble sale on, and he said, "Come on, lads, let's dress up." So the entire party, including the committee men, dressed up in old clothing, women's clothing, hats, whatever we could find, and then we all trooped next door at midnight into the police station where they were interviewing these lads. And you know what? I think the sense of humour imbued in that made them say at the end of it, "All right, lads, on your way, just behave yourselves next time." And it was things like that, the spontaneity of doing things which, you know, you look back on now and you think, "Oh my God, did we really do that?" But great days, great days. Yeah.